From Pittsburgh to Port Allegheny, York to Beaver Falls, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the discovery and development of natural gas in the Marcellus Shale region sparked an economic resurgence in parts of Pennsylvania. Now a study by the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association finds even more economic growth will occur if the necessary pipeline infrastructure is built. David Taylor is here to lead a Capitol Watch discussion. And the left claims it is heartless to require able-bodied people to work. But on my town hall commentary, I'll explain why trapping people in government dependency is not only heartless, but mean. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capitol Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. A nationwide poll released by the American Federation for Children found a 4% increase in support for school choice, with more than two-thirds now supporting giving parents options when it comes to deciding where their children will be educated. Results of the poll were studied by the Commonwealth Foundation, where senior policy analyst Mark LeBlond found that support for school choice now spans voters of every age, race, and political party. Latinos voiced the highest level of support for increased school choice option, 73%, and millennials led the way among age groups with 75% in support. 80% of Republicans, 69% of independents, and 56% of Democrats support school choice. The Fairness Center, an organization which fights for worker rights, has announced it has filed its first ever class action lawsuit. The lead plaintiffs in the suit are three labor and industry employees in Greensburg who are suing SEIU, the Service Employees International Union, for violating their First Amendment rights as affirmed by a U.S. Supreme Court ruling last summer. The employees do not want to be members of the union, and it is unconstitutional to require them to be members. The union, however, in a bid to circumvent the ruling, is attempting to restrict the ability of members to resign to a 15-day period in a multi-year agreement. The suit was filed in an effort to force the union to comply with the Supreme Court's ruling and uphold the rights of the workers. And in political news, holding elective office isn't what it used to be. One congressman and one state senator have decided to resign and return to the private sector. Congressman Tom Marino, who represented a sprawling Williamsport area district in north-central Pennsylvania, has left Congress and is returning to the private sector. Senator Rich Alloway of Franklin County, apparently out of frustration with the Capitol's political climate, announced he is resigning his seat next month. Special elections will be held to fill both seats. The districts are heavily Republican, and party control of neither seat is likely to change. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Investment in the construction of more pipelines will enable Pennsylvania to further develop its natural gas resources, in the process creating family-sustaining jobs. That is the result of a new study released by the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. David Taylor of PMA is joined for a Capitol Watch look at the study by Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business Pennsylvania and Carl Marrera of PMA. David?
And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Rebecca, thanks so much for being on the program.
Happy to be here, David. Thank you.
Well, and we have a special guest today. We have Carl Marrera, the Vice President of Government Affairs at Pennsylvania Manufacturers. Carl, thanks for being on the show.
Always a pleasure to be here, David. Thank you.
So, Rebecca, we're here in large measure to showcase Carl's handiwork. As the listeners have heard over time about a pro-growth, pro-production agenda for energy for Pennsylvania so that we can have more competition, lower prices, and a better environment for making things, there are things that we need to do. And trying to document like all the different ways that Pennsylvania has failed to keep up, it's not fun, but it's necessary. But part of what we have been needing to do is like trying to explain the actual opportunity cost of what we of what we've missed out on. Because, you know, as the listeners have heard me say many times, year over year, decade after decade, that Pennsylvania's growth in gross state product has only been a fraction of the national average. And so by degrees over time, we get left behind. So wanting to make the most of Pennsylvania's energy opportunity for manufacturing, we need to find a way to connect that Pennsylvania energy production to the commercial and industrial and residential customers who can benefit from it. And Carl, how do we make that connection?
You always say, Dave, you can't miss what you never had. But now we can miss it because we can plug in the numbers of exactly what it would have looked like to have a large manufacturer of certain types with a certain number of employees or a certain number of output. And not only what does that mean for the initial investment to create that plant.
Right, the facility itself, beyond the facility itself.
Yeah, we can see what does that total energy-enabled economy actually mean. And using M-Plan, which is economic modeling software, we are actually able to plug in that data and see what happens. But what we have here with this specific case is Braskem USA,
right.
Which is a Brazilian-based company but has its national United States headquarters in Center City, Philadelphia. And they were looking to locate a new facility to do polypropylene manufacturing.
And this is back in 2015.
Back
so
in 2015.
This was a live fire exercise that you had a Philadelphia-headquartered manufacturing company, energy production company, looking to build a new facility. And ultimately, they didn't choose the Pennsylvania location.
No, they chose Texas. And the reason, a lot of times whenever you – and this happens often, David, unfortunately, but not many people usually hear about it. There's site selection happening all the time, all day, every day. Companies are looking to invest and hire in different parts of the nation, Pennsylvania being one of them. But a lot of times that vacant – manufacturing facility or that vacant office building on the corner, you don't know necessarily who's looking or how close a deal was to coming to fruition.
Exactly.
But in this case, it was very, very public. And actually, the Braskem USA CEO, Mark Nikolic, he actually said, and this is a direct quote, "I was disappointed to choose Texas, but we had to choose the place where we had easy access to feedstocks. Decisions are already being made by businesses like ours to move elsewhere, because it has not evolved in Pennsylvania fast enough, completely enough, and through the entire logistics chain." And what he's referring to is the moving of natural gas liquids through pipelines. What he's saying here is that there is not enough pipeline infrastructure in the Philadelphia area to have a facility where they can do polypropylene manufacturing.
Right, because again, we're talking about taking the inputs from the, we call it the wet gas, that in Western Pennsylvania, that the natural gas comes out of the ground with lots of other chemicals, with butane, pentane, propane, ethane, and natural gasoline. And so to be able to take those manufacturing inputs from where they're harvested to where the facilities are, we need to have pipeline. Our failure to build enough infrastructure fast enough means that in this instance that we missed out. And so using the program, the diagnostic tool that Carl mentioned, PMA was able to do a study to say, here's what Delaware County, Pennsylvania would look like with an investment like Braskem was considering.
So the Texas facility, they actually said that the Texas facility could be a mirror image. Braskem directly said that the Texas facility could be a mirror image for some kind of expansion that they would do in the Philadelphia area.
And so this is still on the table.
This could still happen.
It's potential, yes.
There is potential. But the LaPorte, Texas facility is a $675 million investment in the overall infrastructure of the building, and it will require 1,000 construction jobs over 2 years. And once the facility is fully operational, it will take 50 full-time jobs to support the plastic and resin manufacturing facility once it is operational. So if you actually take those numbers, this is what the amazing thing about M-Plan, and this is what we mean by an energy-enabled economy. 1,000 construction jobs doesn't mean 1,000 construction jobs, mm-hmm. because there's so much activity and support of those 1,000 construction jobs. So 1,000 construction jobs actually means 1,380 jobs created in the overall economy almost instantaneously.
Right. And so we're talking about the suppliers, the materials, the services, all the support that goes into those functioning jobs, correct?
You're absolutely right. So the indirect and those that are directly supporting the construction activity pretty much directly, that accounts for about 100 additional jobs. Then there's what are called induced jobs. And induced jobs are actually a lot of your members. And that amounts to 281 new jobs. And those are the restaurants and
services,
the hospitals,
retail.
The colleges. Yes, absolutely.
Makes sense.
And those are a lot of your members, Rebecca.
Yes, a lot of those are small businesses.
And that's one of the things that we always try to talk about is that it's not just the core manufacturing activity itself. It's the whole energy-enabled economy that revolves around it. Without the large manufacturer, you don't have the smaller businesses like you represent.
Supply chains, distribution networks, vendors of industrial services, your accounting, your legal, your HR, all those kinds of things.
But here's where the multiplier effect actually becomes even more apparent. So for just 50 full-time manufacturing jobs—
In the new facility once
it's
done.
In the new facility once it's done. So after 2-year completion of a construction project, we will then have 50 new manufacturing jobs in the plastics and resins manufacturing industry pretty much in perpetuity.
Yeah.
For 50 new manufacturing jobs, what that actually means is 180 new jobs sustained in that region for as long as those jobs remain. And the economic impact that that would have per year is $96,279,000. So, I mean, near $100 million per year in reoccurring economic activity.
That's astonishing.
It is.
And so again, and Carl's exactly right. I often say you don't miss what you never had. And so being able now to actually measure the opportunity cost to say, look, there's a hole in the world where this facility should have been. If this had been in the Philadelphia area instead of in the Houston area, that this initial investment, but all of the dynamism, all of the ongoing economic activity that would have resulted, like this would be in place to, again, to lift the economy, to provide opportunity, to generate prosperity for southeastern Pennsylvania. But we missed it.
The biggest reason why the company didn't locate here was because of the lack of feedstocks or pipeline infrastructure. Are there other factors that you think went into that decision? How about the business climate here in Pennsylvania?
I mean, the overall cost of doing business in Pennsylvania, as I know the listeners of this program are well aware.
Yes.
The overall cost of doing business in Pennsylvania is not necessarily competitive. However, when you're dealing with the natural gas liquid supply chain, one of the most expensive components is the transmission of those fluids. So being as close to the source as possible means less transmission, which means less transmission cost. So with the abundance of natural gas in Pennsylvania, especially the wet gas out in the western portion of the state, it in theory is a lot cheaper to send those natural gas liquids to a pipeline to Philadelphia than it is to send them to the Houston metro area. So while Pennsylvania's business competitiveness lacks behind our competitor states like Texas for this type of investment, the fact that these raw materials are so close puts us at a unique advantage. Mm-hmm. But without sufficient pipeline to get that gas to the manufacturing facility, we will continue to lose out on investment like this.
Yes, and it'll remain a hypothetical advantage until we make it real. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me on the program, Carl Marrera from PMA and Rebecca Euler from NFIB Pennsylvania. So PMA, Carl, you conducted this study, and what else did we learn about what could come from this kind of energy-enabled economy?
Well, here's where I think, and this really would affect some of Rebecca's members especially, is that you have to look at what's being produced here. And we're talking in big scientific words, polys and enes and whatever else. What they're making is plastic.
Right.
Okay? And out of that plastic, they're making things that we use and rely on every day. things as simple as a yogurt container. That's one of the things that I believe that they actually might be making in the Texas facility. Rebecca, what would it mean to your members who are farmers to have such a large end user, such as a yogurt manufacturer? Because you know what? Probably the most expensive input to a yogurt manufacturer's product is the container itself, more than the yogurt. So if we could have a facility like Brassman in Philadelphia making this plastic and then have another manufacturer locate next door to it to make and shape the little yogurt cups and then bring in the dairy industry to fill those yogurt cups, what could that mean for members like yours?
Well, I can tell you that the dairy industry would be incredibly excited about an opportunity like that because they're experiencing a really difficult time right now across the state. And we have a lot of dairy farmer members at NFIB. So an opportunity like a yogurt manufacturing facility would be amazing for our members. And that, of course, doesn't even include, like we talked about, some of the other businesses that grow up around those businesses. A lot of those businesses are small businesses. And this type of opportunity would really impact, economic development potentially across the state, like you said.
And this is why we need our leaders to think dynamically, that in fact, the Brascom sized investment, the $675 million initial capital investment, that would be on the upper end of the kind of, you know, big marquee projects that that would come to Pennsylvania in a given year or even over a multi-year period. And we need to do those things that are necessary to make this investment possible.
And what this means is tax revenue for those lawmakers too. Tax revenue through the wages that are going to be created. Tax income through the products and the additional output that's going to be generated within the economy. It requires stepping back and taking a look at Pennsylvania as a whole and thinking, what could we be? What could we be in Pennsylvania if we had a robust polypropylene and plastics and resins manufacturing cluster in Philadelphia? What would that mean if then it created just an array of products that then the dairy industry in Chester County and in Lancaster County could tap into that potential to fill those products up with something? What would happen if we had a car manufacturer outside of Altoona? What would happen if we had a revitalized plastics industry up in Erie and an enhanced metals and coatings industry in the Wilkes-Barre area? All of that is possible, but right now we're lacking the infrastructure in Pennsylvania to get those manufacturers the products that they need to conduct modern manufacturing.
Yep, the industrial inputs.
And those industrial – without those industrial inputs, you don't have a final product.
We're talking about building pipeline infrastructure, which is critical to projects like this. How about also sort of the impact of that pipeline infrastructure on the rest of Pennsylvanians? Presumably, we're talking about lower energy costs.
I am so glad that you bring this up because I actually just this past week was up in the town of Tenkanic. And in the town of Tenkanic, they are connecting the entire town to a natural gas pipeline.
Amazing.
And you have to think of these pipelines for what they are. You have the interstate pipelines. Those are the really big pipelines that, they're called interstate for a reason. They connect
major arteries.
They connect entire regions to, very, very large loads of natural gas and natural gas liquids. Then you have what are called gathering lines. And from the gathering lines, you have also distribution lines. And the distribution lines are the things that go into your home, into my home, into the local businesses, into the manufacturing facilities. And here you have the town of Tenkanic, Pennsylvania. And if you're not familiar with the geography, Tenkanic is in the epicenter of especially the dry gas revolution in Pennsylvania. And yet this community is gas starved. The people in Tenkanic are literally 10 miles away from drilling activity, but they're heating their homes with coal, with wood, with heating oil. And they can't get natural gas into their homes. And their UGI is actually connecting them right now. And to your point, Rebecca, if you have a major manufacturer come in, and they run a line for that manufacturer, all of the homes, all of the small businesses, all of the other manufacturing facilities in that area can tap into that pipeline as well, lowering heating costs. In fact, Pennsylvania has some of the lowest fuel costs when it comes to natural gas, if you can get it.
This is the world that I want to live in. And so I'm really grateful, Carl, that you were able to acquire this particular diagnostic tool so that we could bring it on board, have it in-house to conduct this kind of analysis to, you know, again, to paint the picture for the general public, of course, but also especially for the decision makers in Harrisburg to say, here in, you know, here's the spreadsheet, here are the numbers, here is what is possible, here's where the opportunities are if only we seize them and make them real.
And I'd be remiss if I did not mention it, but when you take out the initial investment of that $675 million for the plant itself, if you look at just the economic impact of the jobs and the new expanded manufacturing activity in less than 5 years, it is more than $1 billion worth of economic
activity. $1,000 million.
$1 billion worth of economic activity.
And that's what we
missed.
Less
than 5 years in one of the areas of Pennsylvania that desperately needs it the most.
Well, Carl, thank you for sharing. And all that is available online?
It is at pamanufacturers.org.
Outstanding. Well, we're coming down. This is the end of the time that we have. And as Carl said, you know where to find us online. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you do?
They can find NFIB at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find the archive of our shows at lincolnradiojournal.com. To everyone from Carl and Rebecca and me, thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. The headline blared from the Sunday Opinion page, "Where's Washington's Heart?" Rather than being an editorial on helping to lift people out of poverty, it was instead, predictably, a robust and deeply flawed defense of government social welfare programs. Decades after President Lyndon Johnson declared a war on poverty that turned out to be a massive expansion of government dependency programs, and after the expenditure of trillions of dollars on those programs, the needle on poverty has barely moved. What has changed is the number of Americans trapped on the government dole. The left believes this is a good thing. Government is assisting more people. And while helping people who truly need assistance is a shared goal across the political spectrum, conservatives want to take that one step further and return as many people as possible to self-sufficiency. The term cycle of dependency is used by social scientists to describe how addiction to government aid gets handed down from one generation to the next. But there is another cycle of dependency that explains the left's fixation with growing the number of people receiving public assistance. Here's how it works. More people dependent on government creates more voters who will support those candidates pledging to preserve and expand their benefits. This results in the election or re-election of left-leaning candidates who then work to increase the number of people dependent on such programs. Repeat, repeat, repeat. Attempt to break this cycle and the left will attack, saying you lack compassion, or as the headline put it, heart. This too is a favorite and highly effective tactic of the left. Big government advocates are exceptionally good at messaging. They can take any government program, regardless of how ineffective or inefficient it might be, and make it sound like mom and apple pie. For example, the Affordable Care Act made health care less available and more expensive. Illegal immigrants have become dreamers, and the murdering of babies in the womb becomes reproductive rights. What triggered the editorial screed, augmented by the subheadline, "When it comes to helping hunger Americans, we have lost our humanity," was a move by the Trump administration to allow states greater flexibility in moving people off the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, commonly known as food stamps, and into self-sufficiency. You would think helping Americans become more self-sufficient and thus not needing government assistance would be an obvious goal. But it would break the left's electoral cycle of dependency, so crank up the propaganda machine and declare such efforts to be heartless. But are they heartless? The Trump administration's goal is to foster the movement of able-bodied adults without dependent children from dependency into the workplace. A similar effort in Pennsylvania passed the General Assembly last year, but fell victim to a veto by Governor Wolf, who saw the threat to his electoral coalition. Opposition to this policy is the opposite of heartless. It restores human dignity. Nobody is proposing that children go unfed or those with physical or mental disabilities are denied SNAP benefits. The goal is for those able to work and for whom jobs are available to do so. This is, as conservative author Arthur Brooks termed it, the conservative heart. Provide equality of opportunity through educational reforms such as expanded school choice and job training programs. Foster a pro-growth economy that makes available good family-sustaining jobs. This approach will break the classic cycle of poverty and move those who are able from being dependent on government to helping government through their tax dollars fund programs for those in actual need. In fact, advocacy for the continued trapping of able-bodied, able-minded individuals on government assistance is what is truly heartless. Doing so with an ulterior political motive is not only heartless, but downright mean. It is time we stop falling for the left spin and put into place those policies that restore more people to the dignity of self-sufficiency. With a town hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WBHV-AM in Somerset, WOWY-FM in State College, along with WMBS-AM and FM in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. And it is time to talk about the annual Pennsylvania Leadership Conference. This year is the 30th anniversary Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which will be held April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Wall Street Journal columnist and commentator Kimberly Strassel. As usual, there will be numerous speakers, including Jimmy Kemp of the Jack Kemp Foundation and Mark Janus, plaintiff in the landmark U.S. Supreme Court case Janus v. AFSCME. Panel presentations on key national and state issues, workshops, and the opportunity to network with conservatives from across the state will also be part of the conference. To learn more and to register for the 2019 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.